Just before 8:09 in the morning, you're listening to Upfront. I'm Brian Edwards-Tiecher.
And I'm Kat Brooks. And in July, the Oakland Police Department quietly released a report that validated, or the findings of an investigation that validated what the Oakland community members have known for quite some time. Use of force incidents have not gone down. They just weren't being reported. We are joined by Darwin Von Graham, an independent journalist covering violence and misconduct by police departments. Good morning,
Darwin. Good morning.
So what did the Oakland Police Department report in terms of use of force between 2013 and 2017?
Yeah, this began around 2015, 16, 17. The department was repeatedly saying in public documents and forums that use of force by officers was dropping, that officers were drawing their guns less, that they were grappling with suspects less, that there was just less force in general to effectuate an arrest. And they said that the real victory here was that the actual number of arrests weren't dropping, so that the police were effectively fighting crime and making arrests, but they were no longer having these very negative interactions with people.
And they're actually touting this as like other departments across the country should learn from the Oakland Police Department, correct?
Yeah, they were touting this as a major policy victory for the department that other departments should learn from.
And then what happened?
Well, and then, and to the department's credit, I believe that part of the way they discovered this was they have a very effective office in OPD, the Inspector General. And the Inspector General asked a simple question, because they saw this phenomenal decline in the number of times that officers were drawing their guns and pointing them at suspects. And the OIG said, that's a huge decline. Let's figure out what's happening here, because it can't just be a new policy. So they started auditing and examining specific cases, and they found out that, in fact, officers were drawing their guns, and they were holding them in what officers understood to be the low ready position, which means you have your gun out, but the barrel of the gun is pointed at the ground. But in fact, a lot of officers were pointing the barrel at the feet or the knees or the lower torso area of individuals, but still self-defining that as, oh, I had it in low ready, so I don't have to fill out that use of force form. I did not draw my gun and point it at someone, even though they did. So once that was exposed within the department, the department's monitor, federal court-appointed monitor Robert Warshaw, conducted a similar analysis and then said, yes, the problem with drawing guns on suspects, on individuals, is real. And also, we're finding instances where police are twisting people's arms, doing takedowns, throwing them on the ground, pulling their hair, things like that. And that's also not being reported.
So this is all because the auditors were able to review body camera footage and dash camera footage to check it against what police actually put in their reports.
Yeah, and this is a really good example of actually how body cameras are a very positive police accountability mechanism. And we've seen a lot in recent years about, you know, body cameras being used to just expand the surveillance state or to reinforce some very problematic police practices. But this is an example here of the body cameras that the officers are required to wear allow for these very detailed audits, so they can pull, you know, dozens of examples where an officer didn't report using force during an arrest. They can go back and look at, you know, the 2-3 hours of body camera video during that arrest and say, well, look, there you twisted that person's arm, you put them up against the wall, you know, you had your gun out, it's not in your report, why?
Do we have enough data from body camera footage to know whether underreporting is on the increase?
I didn't see that in this recent audit or in the two previous but less complete audits that the OIG did and that the monitor did. All we know is that it was reported that use of force was decreasing, but in fact, it appears not to have decreased. We don't know if there's an increase in non-reporting, although it would appear that way, because if you look at the old numbers, there were high levels of use of force that were being reported, and then there was a dramatic decline. The decline itself is accounted for by the non-reporting. The question the department has, the question the public has, the police commission at this point now is, why are officers not reporting it? the description within the department is it's a policy issue. It's a misunderstanding of officers. They need to be trained better. But in fact, there are 17 open internal affairs investigations into whether officers were willfully not reporting this stuff and trying to essentially hide use of force, hide the numbers.
Well, I think then we have to go to the next layer of, you know, what you wrote about and what was found is what demographic of people are they not reporting use of force on?
Yeah, it's virtually no white people in the audit. There were virtually no white people who they found force was used upon, but it wasn't reported. There were some instances in which the department uses the term Hispanic, Latino. There were some instances in which Latinos were forcefully arrested, and that wasn't reported. But that was not disproportionate to the overall population in Oakland or the overall numbers of arrests of Latinos. Black people is a very different story. Black people are the ones who are being forcefully arrested, and then police are not reporting it, and it's very disproportionate to the population and the numbers of arrests.
So you got a cop, rough someone up, fills out a report, says no use of force. You got an auditor, pulls the footage, says there was a clear use of force. That's just an audit. What happens next? Does that trigger any kind of disciplinary action against the cop?
Yeah. So the most recent audit that came out does note there are 17 open internal affairs investigations.
But are they separate from or resulting from the audit?
The audit itself cannot lead to discipline against a police officer because the inspector general, the discipline system is like very particular. To discipline an officer, you have to open an internal affairs case that can be opened by the department itself or by a citizen complaint, or you can open a police commission complaint. If the inspector general finds an instance in which an officer uses force, it's very clear, and then doesn't report it, and then the OIG suspects that it was a willful non-reporting, or it was such an egregious mistake that it deserves to be disciplined, they can then forward that to IA. And that's what happened here with these roughly 17 cases. The department hasn't said yet whether any of those cases have been resolved and what the findings are. And there's about, you know, they have roughly a year period, so maybe like 6 more months before we may know if there were willful non-reporting examples.
There are how many tasks in the NSA?
I'll
translate. That's the negotiated settlement agreement that's been in place since the Riders lawsuit.
And so we'll go further. The Oakland Police Department has been under federal receivership for
Since 2003. So this is
going on 16 years.
Yeah.
I feel like I get lost because I'm like screaming about it all the time. And like, is it 15? 16.
Yeah.
16 years. And as a result, we have this negotiated settlement agreement. There are 50-something tasks. Use of force is one of those tasks, correct?
Yeah, there's multiple tasks in the NSA that require use of force policies, better use of force policies, better use of force reporting, and better investigations into various kinds of use of forces. It's like using force, reporting it, being transparent about it, not brutalizing people, only using force when it's absolutely necessary and only using as much as they need to effectuate an arrest that's lawful. All of that is integral to the negotiated settlement agreement.
And they had checked off some of those tasks as completed.
Yeah, they had checked off several of those tasks as completed. Some of them are now in the realm of not completed anymore because of what the monitor deems to be various problems with investigations into use of force incidents.
Any word from Oakland Mayor Libby Schaaf on any of this?
I haven't seen her comment publicly on it. I did not ask her office for comment for the report I wrote. I did ask the police department for some comments, and I did not hear back from them.
How many police departments get this level of auditing on reporting on use of force? In other words, like, do we know whether this is a specific problem to the Oakland Police Department or whether this is policing in America?
Yeah, I frequently tell people because there's the perception that OPD is like one of the worst police departments in the nation, but actually OPD is one of the most thoroughly, meticulously overseen, monitored police departments in the nation.
Now
it is. Prior to the year 2000, OPD was one of the least reviewed and monitored police departments. But now the levels of oversight are very extensive within OPD. It would be very interesting to see audits like these conducted at other departments that deploy body cameras where you can pull that footage from every arrest. The way the OIG did it was they took hundreds of arrests over a 1 year period for particular types of offenses that will likely lead to a forceful arrest. So for example, if the person was arrested for resisting an officer, well, by definition,
everyone is arrested for.
Yeah, a lot of people get arrested for that because essentially, you know, you allegedly commit one offense and then you resist the officer and they tack that on. But by definition, resisting an officer means the officer is probably going to use force to overcome that resistance. So if you pull every resisting arrest report and then look at the body camera video, well, there's probably going to be force used, and if the officer doesn't report the force in that particular form they're required to fill out, then you can start see how they add up and find that there's a problem here.
I mean, a couple things. We know there's a problem with policing in America, right? I mean, there's a whole bunch of work that's being done around the nation and an international movement. But the other piece is that, and you and I talked about this when you called me,
yeah,
and we were talking about this, which is that this is not the reality of people on the ground in the city of Oakland, right? So on my mayoral campaign, through my work with ABTP, people repeatedly would say, that's trash, we're experiencing this. And then how does this jive with the equity index report that came out during the camp, like right before the 2018 elections, where they got a 1 out of 100 for use of force?
Yeah, I mean, this reinforces that equity indicators report. This confirms a lot of other research that was done, in particular the Eberhardt, the Stanford research that's been done on racial inequalities as they're manifest through policing in Oakland. We just see on almost every indicator, every level, every way that a police officer can interact with someone, we see these unequal and disproportionate and more harmful and more disrespectful types of interactions with Black people in Oakland. And
that's despite this intense oversight and intervention.
It is. The story here about Oakland is that, you know, this is a department where there's more effort going into changing it than probably any other police department in America. And yet we see these enduring problems. And so, yeah, you got to wonder, like, most departments in California have virtually no oversight. They don't have police commissions. Right? They don't have civilian police commissions. They're not.
We don't either, but go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, ostensibly we do. But yeah, they're not under federal court oversight, right? There's no NSA. So most police departments, there's very little oversight. Oakland, there's a lot. So we see these problems and we see efforts to fix them. And yet it's clear that it's very difficult to change these things.
I mean, that's what makes me want to return to the question of, okay, you caught police lying in writing and on camera. What happens to them? Because all the oversight in the world doesn't matter if there's not actually consequences.
All the oversight in the world doesn't matter as long as we keep tinkering around the edges of policing in this country as opposed to radically transforming it. It was born out of the slave trade. It's still acting as a master of maintaining race-based capitalism in this country. And that's through the arrest, incarceration, harming, maiming, beating, murdering of Black people in this country.
But on the other hand,
Oakland's a perfect case study for that. Like, Oakland is a perfect case study for that argument, that you can have all the training, you can spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, as we did with Eberhardt.
Millions.
That was being nice.
Just millions of dollars spent, tens of millions of dollars spent over the last decade or two on this effort.
And there's still the core issue. And it's because we're not dealing with the root of the problem, because nobody wants to have, well, some of us want to have, but law enforcement doesn't want to have the real conversation about what's happening, what's at the root cause of it, and that's policing as an institution in this country. Sorry, you're the guest, not me.
No, but that's the question, right? And your answer to it is a compelling one. I think, you know, in talking with the police department, what they'll say in their defense, and this is in the Inspector General report, is that of all the use of force incidents they reviewed for this audit, none of them were found to be out of compliance in and of the use of force. So they'll say, well, it's not like our officers brutalized anyone. They just used the force they needed to make the arrest. But the problem is they didn't report it, right? So that's what they'll say in their defense. They'll say, we've reformed ourselves insofar as we're not unlawfully violating people's civil rights anymore. Now, we know that that's also subject to controversy because there's multiple open lawsuits against the police department for using that type of force. And many people in the community say their lived experience is that they're being brutalized and that that problem still hasn't been solved. Also, those voices are often dismissed. But as you pointed out earlier in this conversation, you know, even though those voices and those points are frequently dismissed, we often find later on that there's a lot of truth to it, as we're finding with these unreported use of force incidents.
The term in compliance, right? I mean, I just want to point out that that's also what they say about every single shooting, right? Every single murder that they commit, including DeMario Hogg, who was asleep in his car.
Yeah, and compliance with that policy, right? It doesn't mean that it's morally right or that it's what society should. It doesn't mean that it's truly just. It doesn't mean that it's what society really needs. It just means that it's within the administrative policy that's on paper.
Not anymore, thanks to the passage of AB 392.
That's true. Yeah.
we'll hopefully see a difference. I do want to clarify before we move on, because I do want to talk about Joshua Pollack. What I meant, y'all, when I made my facetious comment about not having a civilian police commission was, in my humble opinion, the mayor and city council have way too much control over that commission. And we've seen it in the fights for autonomy that the commission's been fighting and should continue to fight in the coming months. So that people are clear. I want to talk about Joshua Pollack because the five officers that the police commission has recommended be fired are suing the city. So let's start with what happened with Joshua and when.
Yeah, so this was March 2018. Mr. Pollack is unconscious, sleeping, perhaps experiencing some sort of health crisis, maybe related to consuming drugs or something. Between two buildings in West Oakland, an officer walks up on him, sees that he's holding a handgun. Backup is called. Police officers surround him. They bring in the Bearcat armored vehicle. They deploy four assault rifles to provide cover for officers who want to arrest him. And then he suddenly wakes up and he sort of looks up and he sort of appears to be trying to get up. And then they order him to drop the gun several times. He raises his shoulders and then they four officers open fire, killing him. A fifth officer shoots him with a beanbag round from a shotgun. He dies. There are several investigations. One is the Internal Affairs Investigation and the Executive Force Review Board by the police department. This is to determine within the police department if the officers should be disciplined for killing Mr. Pollack. They find that they shouldn't be disciplined, that the officers acted within policy. That report is forwarded to the police chief. The police chief concurs with it and says no discipline. The parallel investigation by the Civilian Police Commission's investigative agency says essentially the same thing. The officers acted within policy. They shouldn't be disciplined. But then the federal monitor, Robert Warshaw, says, no, they acted out of policy. This is a manual of rules level one violation, meaning essentially they should be fired. Because essentially the Oakland Police Department is under federal court receivership in all but name, and Warshaw is the monitor and compliance director, and he has the power to direct the department to do things. His direction takes precedent over the police chief's. So then, and this is all very convoluted and complex, and I apologize to listeners, but what happens is, so because Warshaw says they should be fired, but the police agency, the civilian police agency, says there was no violation, then there's a conflict between the police department's official finding and the police commission investigative agency official finding. So under Oakland City Charter, if there's a conflict there, this conflict is resolved by a discipline committee of three members of the Civilian Police Commission. So they had their discipline committee, and the discipline committee came to the conclusion that there was a violation, and they found essentially all in favor of what Robert Warshaw found, and they then ordered that the officers be fired. So the officers are being fired at this point, and now they filed this lawsuit saying that the city charter was violated, their due process rights have been violated, and their memorandum of their labor union contract with the city was violated. And this is a huge controversy, and there's a lot of complicated angles to it, which I could get into, but it's just extremely complicated.
Just quickly, we only have 60 seconds, but any basis for any of their claims? Because the way you just...
Yeah.
There are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the police officers union has every right to point out how messy this process was. The main thing here is that when Measure LL passed, which was what created the police commission in, what was that, 2016?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It never contemplated that federal court oversight of OPD. So it essentially acted as if there was no monitor who had power over the department. And so that person and his power and the federal court's power over the department has created this very contradictory situation where you have this complete other set of power and authority that isn't in the city charter, and it makes it very confusing. So I think the police officers union actually have every right to file this lawsuit and say, let's sort this out.
We'll see what happens. We have been speaking with Darwin Bond Graham, an independent journalist covering violence and misconduct by police departments. Darwin, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thanks.